Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Corinth in Your Car. I believe we are on episode 56. I'm here with Josh and with Adam, and do you know what that means, that we are on episode 56?
It means we are a year and 4 weeks old.
Sure, something like that, but or it may be even more than that. My podcast.
I'm looking that up right now.
60-something, I think.
60-something. Either way.
It means you can't count. It's episode 63.
63. So this means that we have put out approximately, maybe a little bit over, 63 hours of content.
Oh, definitely over.
Definitely over.
Yeah.
So just quick fun fact. The average person, if they're going to read the three original Lord of the Rings series, would take them 37 hours from front to beginning. So we have put out more content than that series right there.
And so, better. And better.
I don't know about that. But yeah. Fun time. So we're gonna
more laughs from our content than from Lord of the Rings.
I would say so, probably. Yeah, yeah.
Per hour.
At least from us.
Per hour, way more laughs.
There you go.
Than Lord of the Rings.
So we're gonna continue to release content and laugh together today. We'll start with
less sword fights.
Less
more laughs.
Dragons.
That should be our tagline.
Less
dragons, more laughs.
Less dragons, more laughs. Corinth in your car.
We'll workshop that.
Let's jump in. Check in. how are we feeling today? Josh, Adam, what's something from this last week that you are grateful for?
Yeah, it's been a good week. I was particularly grateful for the behavior of my children on Tuesday night. It was a fun night. Sasha had grades due and all that for school on Wednesday. So she was, you know, just working really hard to get that done by Wednesday, which means that normally she would be at ballet, but I went that night and she kind of went home and did the grading, and I was with the kids, and they were great. It was fun. We went to Bread and Butter, which is not my favorite coffee, so I didn't order any food or coffee, but we went there and did homework and then played Connect Four, and then we walked around the square, and then we went to a park. It was just great. Yeah.
You said it's not your favorite coffee? Is that what you said?
Bread and Butter is not my favorite coffee shop.
It's not bad.
I don't like it.
It's not bad. Yeah. It's fine.
It's not bad.
It's,
but they,
it's better than the other one in downtown Covington.
Oh, it's way better than
local.
At local or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, really? I haven't had that one.
Yeah, that one's not very good.
They don't know really what they're
saying. Now, if any of our listeners enjoy it, we think it's great.
Correct. Don't cancel us.
Don't cancel
the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Adam, what about you, man? What's something from this last week that is something to smile about, something you're grateful for?
So it's a double-edged sword. I really enjoy having sunshine in the morning.
So we do have swords.
We do have swords. Just not as many as Lord of the Rings.
Not as many.
I really enjoy sunshine in the morning.
Yeah. Okay.
I really don't like it being dark at 5:30 at night.
Yeah.
So I will choose the positive and say I'm grateful for sunshine in the morning.
No, I'm embracing the negative. It is dumb that it's dark at 6 o'clock.
It's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Like I said, just focus on the positive.
Well, I'm a youth ministry guy too. So I got high schoolers showing up last night to youth group in the dark. I'm like, oh,
yeah. Yep.
This is a bummer. Like,
But at least they have better eyesight than we do.
That's fair. Eating a lot of carrots or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Eat those carrots.
What about you, man? What you grateful for?
Yeah, good week. Grateful for a lot of people. Just people. I would say people supporting and encouraging me and my wife. This last week has been just super, super overwhelming. So it's been a good week, fun week. I want to talk about football.
Let's do it.
We haven't talked about football since the beginning of the season.
And really?
Believe it or not, it's halfway.
I know this.
Through the season.
Through the NFL season.
Through the NFL, through college, it's like even further.
College is almost done.
Yeah.
So I want to just talk about that for a minute. How are you guys feeling about your teams? Josh, Niner gang, how are you feeling?
Yeah, it's been tough 3 weeks. They looked great first 5 weeks, and the last 3 weeks is probably a mixture of injuries and just weird stuff going on and people just hitting a slump. But it's football, and they play the Jaguars this week, so they're a good team.
That's a good team.
And I will say, I mean, there's no excuses. You got to show up and play, and it's the 49ers' own fault that they lost. But I will say the NFL schedulers, I don't think they did anything on purpose. But this is the third game that they've played a team that's coming back from a bye.
And oh, interesting.
Like yeah. 3 out of 4 weeks, the yeah. team that they were playing is fully rested.
Yeah, that's tough.
And then, so they had their bye this week, but it's not even an advantage because they're going to play a team that had a bye and is at home. So they're traveling. Home. So it's, yeah, it's football.
Yeah, I don't know what the Niners number was, but I know somebody ran the numbers before the season just talking about rest advantage because it's a big thing.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs actually have the worst rest advantage mm-hmm. all season of all teams. And it seems like the Niners were top 3 or 5.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
they always have to travel so far anyway because they're on the West Coast. So yeah.
Well, that's their own fault.
Well, yeah.
Well,
should be on the West Coast.
I didn't put it together. So I took a trip out to the Northeast Coast, like Pennsylvania, Washington, all that sort of stuff. My sophomore year of college, and all of a sudden something clicked in my mind just geographically because mm-hmm. I had always thought just looking at the map, like, oh, when the Baltimore Ravens play the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's like, you know, an away game. It's like 45 minutes away.
Right.
Like yeah. it's not all of these cities in the yep. Northeast coast are so close.
Yep.
But then you got like, you know, Kansas City, Denver, all yep. these teams that are landlocked in the Midwest. Anytime they have an away
game,
they're going
hours
away. Yep. And then, you know, the other ones, they're just commuting to Atlanta, mm-hmm. you know, all that yep. sort of stuff.
Yep.
So it's that was an interesting
yeah.
Thing for me to see and learn as I'm driving through all of the major cities in the Northeast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could probably do about a good 2-hour segment on this question.
On the Chiefs, yeah. How are you feeling about your team?
So I'll limit it. And so Chiefs are 7-2 going into the bye. Have a massive problem at wide receiver.
Yep.
They have a $500 million quarterback, and they spent 97 cents on wide receivers.
Yeah.
And they were hoping that the $500 million would be to overcome it. But there's like a basic floor that you got to have, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so they probably should have spent $5. Instead of 97 cents.
Yeah.
And so we'll see after the bye coming out of it. I'm feeling like
tough couple is a tough stretch.
Yeah, we got a tough stretch, but I'm feeling my prediction will be AFC championship game, may win, may lose. And
do we host it?
I don't know at this point.
Yeah, Jacksonville?
No.
Baltimore's looking
Baltimore.
Good.
But the problem with Baltimore is they're in that AFC North, and those teams are going to just beat the snot out of each other.
I could see hosting AFC championship game right now. I could see it being Kansas City or Jacksonville.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Jacksonville. I don't think it's going to be them.
We'll see.
Yeah. I think it's Cincinnati's. The
Cincinnati looks good right now. Scary.
I do.
Oh, well.
So anyway, that's my defense is awesome.
Oh, my goodness. It's so
best
cool.
defense that the Chiefs have had in a really long time.
Yeah. It's really fun.
They're batting everything down. I mean, getting those hands up, even when they're not sacking the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Great defense. Fun to watch. I could echo everything Adam said, but I'll talk about the Texas Longhorns because we'll go college route. There is still hope.
All right.
That the Texas Longhorns make the college football playoff, even with the one loss to OU. Now, it is a little bit of hope, but there is still hope because right now, you got your top four. I don't know what the order is in the rankings after this last weekend, but you've got
Ohio State,
Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia, FSU, mm-hmm. Top four, and then kind of in the mix, Washington, Oregon, Texas, and that's it.
Are they expanding really, next year to 12?
Next year is expanded. Yeah. This year is still just four, mm-hmm. and so you know as it goes right now, Michigan and Ohio State are going to play each other at least once, so only one of them is going to make it.
As long as Michigan still has a team.
Sure.
Right. Been
yeah. Right. Yeah. So one of them is going to make it. You've got Georgia and Alabama potential in from SEC. Mm-hmm. You've got Washington and Oregon potential in from what conference is that? The ACC
yep.
or something like that. And you got FSU. They went out. It's probably going to be in. So there's a slight chance that if Texas can win the Big 12 championship and still be just with one loss, that we might get in. So we'll see.
Hold your breath.
I still am anticipating losing two Big 12 games, but I'm just saying there's still a chance. There's still a chance. That is exciting nonetheless. Hey, one more question before we jump into the sermon. We do ministry. Sometimes ministry is difficult. It's a grind. We don't work just on Sundays and Wednesdays, contrary to popular belief. But in the midst of that, we constantly have things that keep us going. So simple question, and I'll go first. Is just what kept you going in ministry this week? Answer for me is on Sunday night, we were doing Connect for middle school students. And we had an eighth grader. His name is Jackson. He goes to youth middle school, was invited by some friends. And he's been showing up for about a month and a half, 2 months now. And he just came up to me out of the blue and he just gave me a high five and said, "Hey, Luke, thanks for doing Connect on Sunday nights." That was it. And I was just like, man, that was such a cool thing for an eighth grader to say. Just,
yeah,
thanks for doing this. I'm having a blast. So that kept me going. That was encouraging this week. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'm going to lean into the topic of the sermon, just connectedness and community and relationships, that sort of stuff. It's always fun. You know, we grew up on Monday nights, and it's hard to do that during, like, the week, but it's worth it. Every week it kind of comes around like, man, kids got to pack their lunches for school the next day, and they got to lay out their clothes, and we got to clean the house or whatever it is, and it just feels like a rush, but then it's always worth it. Chili was really good, and relationships were even better.
Love it. Love it, love it. Adam?
I think it's probably almost always the people.
Yeah.
So I'll go a different direction and just say it's the call. Just having a call in your life, mm-hmm. and knowing that this is what God has tasked you with.
Yeah. There's almost a some significance found in that.
Oh, yeah.
Some purpose found in that.
Absolutely.
Transition to Searching, a sermon series that we're doing.
Right.
Part number three, Adam, you talked yesterday about meaningful relationships, finding connection, community.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us a quick recap, and then Josh, as soon as Adam is done with that recap, go ahead and jump in with maybe one of the things that stood out to you.
Yeah, just so in terms of searching for that significance and purpose, and one of the things that we were created for was to be in relationship. And so we just spent time, it's a topic that we talk about a lot around here, probably at least a handful, maybe a handful of times. It's at least mentioned a handful of times a year. Mm-hmm. But just talking about the importance of having those relationships around us, because they help us, they build us. And so whenever we are searching for purpose and significance, we need the right community around us. And so community also often helps us discover that meaning in life. So,
yeah,
God created us for relationships.
Okay, cool. Josh, take it away.
Yeah, something that popped up, Adam put in there, the five reasons our culture is so lonely. We might get to more of this later, but just breakdown of family, like divorce, is higher, increased mobility, heavy workloads, the rise of social media, and safetyism. And I just, reading through that text, I just had a thought, like, we probably wouldn't want to do this necessarily, to have people raise their hands or something, like, because that's just embarrassing.
Right.
But I just would wonder, if we did have people raise their hands, how many, it would be a high percentage, I would think, raise their hand, that at least four of them, if not five, all five, apply to them. So the encouragement and the, I guess, just realization and challenge is, hey, we're up against some hurdles. Mm-hmm. So all the more reason to find your people and get in a circle,
right,
and that sort of stuff. Because there's five hurdles there that apply to a lot of people. And if we just act like it's not a thing, then we're going to, I don't know, be blindsided by all that it could hurt us with.
So. Yeah. No, let's talk about those hurdles, because that's where we were going next. You know, Adam, you said the line, we were created to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that it's difficult to find meaningful connection. And you laid out some of what's been talked about, the five reasons that our culture is so lonely today.
Yeah.
It is the breakdown of the family, increased mobility, heavy workloads, rise mm-hmm. of social media, and then safetyism.
Mm-hmm.
As you think through those five, obviously many of them affect our lives at certain points, but which of these five might you see with the majority of people right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
I don't know that I could, I would say in Walton County, man alive, I would say that all five of those, if I were like trying to break it down, I don't know that I would go any more than 20-20-20-20 on any of
those.
Yeah,
really? Okay.
It feels pretty, maybe for us right now, the safetyism is a little lower. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not quite at 20, so you knock it down to 12 and you add, mm-hmm. you know, 2% to each
other four.
But I think all five of those are just,
It might be different generationally too.
Yeah, so, that's a good point.
Good observation.
You know, teens, the rise of social media is probably, mm-hmm. you know, it's the stereotypical answer, but it's still true. That's probably going to be a higher percentage.
Yeah.
And then working people and, you know, they're going to have increased mobility and workloads apply to them more. But yeah.
Have you read, is it Jean Twenge? Is that how you say the name? She wrote the book Generations.
I have not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is bonus material here today, but she has done a lot of research on generations. That's why she wrote a book on generations. but she comes down to it's like, you know, why are teens more depressed? Why are teens dealing with this?
Right.
Blah, 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 blah. And why? And if you chart things, teen depression and all these things started spiking in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is when iPhone ownership hit the tipping point and went over 50%.
Yep.
Yep.
And so she's just like, it's not correlation, it is causation.
Yes.
It is the phone, it is the phone, it is the phone. And I was reading through her book on just the section on Gen Z because it was just talking about how lonely they feel. And she's like, you would think that it can't be something that simple, but it is.
Yeah.
It really, really is. And she tried to disprove it. That like, well, maybe it's this, but it's like,
it's not.
It comes down to the phone.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. She tried to disprove it.
Because mm-hmm.
you hear people like in Christian circles, I just heard, was reminded of somebody who didn't believe in God and tried to, actually went to Israel and Asia Minor and such to look at biblical sites and was so overwhelmed with archaeology. They're like, well, I can't deny this. This is, mm-hmm. I'm a Christian now.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that she would do the same thing with social media and phones. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a thing. I mean, there's, I don't remember where, like who did this research or who came up with this founding, but you talk about Gen Z and the regards to the amount of anxiousness that they feel associated with the amount of media intake and the smartphones and all that sort of stuff. The average teenager, how anxious they feel, mm-hmm. is the same amount of anxiousness that the average psychiatric patient locked in a ward in the 80s felt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's something dangerous about the smartphones. Just proceed with caution there, especially for the parents who are listening. Like maybe your 12, 13, 14-year-old isn't ready to have complete access to a smartphone.
Yeah,
not necessarily saying don't give them a phone or don't give them a smartphone, but maybe you need to limit it a little bit.
Well, and that was one of the things she even points out in Generations is that teens are really at a disadvantage mm-hmm. because if you're at this place to where it's like, well, I'm just not going to have a phone, which would be a weird thing for a teenager
correct.
To say,
yeah.
Essentially they become ostracized.
Yep.
If they have a phone, then they're... It's really easy to get down into this addictive cycle. Mm-hmm. So many things coming out on the dopamine hits and all those, just the way that the phone works. Listening to an interesting podcast by Cal Newport and just talking about how, like, is it Duolingo? Is that the name of the app?
Yeah, there's it. Yep.
So they're like, we want to gamify learning and make it as addictive as social media. And he does a really good job of just like, it's a great aspiration. But it won't happen because the type of hits that they are just mm-hmm. completely different.
Yep.
And anyway, just a lot of just great insight about, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-olds and phones. So. Yeah.
So maybe, I'm not going to speak authoritatively on this, but maybe the rise of social media is the highest one for all of us because I think it hits differently.
It does. So the way that Twinge... Man, I'm so glad she's never going to hear this podcast. phrased it was that in a lot of ways, social media is like alcohol.
Okay.
And that for adults, many can handle it much better.
Yep.
Because their brains are more fully formed and all those other kind of things.
Sure.
And than a teenager can, who is going to be much more prone to... being affected by it, which is why we have drinking limit or drinking age and those things, because mm-hmm. physiologically there's something there that our bodies just aren't able to handle, or even emotionally
yep.
At certain ages. So
it's interesting. So there you go.
Yeah.
definitely a cause to some of the loneliness that we see. We've talked about these five. Here's just an interesting question that you can say yay or nay to. It would be, would you add a sixth? If you could start to think through kind of our culture, where we're at right now. So these five reasons, would you add a sixth? If you would, what would it be?
So maybe it is related to heavy workloads, but I would say, and this is an idea I got from the Newport, Cal Newport podcast yesterday as I was listening to it, is that we have come to this place to where our significance and our identity comes from our job, and that it has to be our passion. Whereas 100 years ago, it'd be like, I'm a farmer. Why do you do that? Well, I got to provide for my family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where do you find significance? Well, I'm a deacon in my church. I work with the other farmers in the area to make a farmers union, or you know what I'm saying? It's, I've got these, or I'm on the Chamber of Commerce, or I do this and sure. this and this. And there's this switch that took place over the past couple of generations to where it's like, you're supposed to find your significance in your work.
Yeah.
And if you're not passionate about it, that means there's something wrong about, you know, with you. And so I would say that could be related to the heavy,
like a cultural shift in purpose.
Yeah.
Has led to some
and significance.
Loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like, it leads to dissatisfaction because it's like, well, man, I'm a lawyer and, I don't feel passionate about doing law. And so that means there's something wrong with me. And so I've got to like try to find all these other things there instead of going, yeah, I'm a lawyer. And so that's how I provide for my family. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to find significance in other things, which will be relationships, which will be, helping my community be better. It's going to be, I'm going to serve at my church. I'd say a sixth or seventh one. Could be even the rise in the post-Christian culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so we've forsaken giving up meeting together for this great purpose. And so that's caused us to be even lonelier.
Yeah. Josh, any thoughts?
Sort of a piggyback on the post-Christian culture. I don't know that it's directly related, but at least sideways related. That our culture is not a communal culture. It is an individualistic culture, has been for a while. Even before the iPhone, there was something called MySpace.
Right.
And even the words mean things.
What's MySpace?
Stop it.
Just kidding.
I'm not saying these things are necessarily right or wrong, but even just our own culture, like, well, you go find your spouse. I mean, I'm not supporting arranged marriages, perhaps.
I trust my parents.
But yeah, even stuff like that, like there's not community. People, and I'm one of them. I've moved. My parents have moved. And
that's the mobility thing.
You know, my in-laws are, I mean, that's not just my job. Like I moved across the country, though.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm commuting every day. I'm commuting 5 minutes a day.
Right.
But my family and community is so far away that it can be very tempting, especially culturally. There's this belief that what matters to you is chief, and there's not very much submission to tradition and culture. I mean, sorry, not culture. Tradition, community, things outside of yourself. If you don't want to do it, then you shouldn't have to be forced to do it. There's just that underlying belief that I think all of us have now because we've been here so long.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So the point is, these five, the additionals that we're talking through, point is, we're lonely, and we shouldn't be. It's not good for man to be alone. It's from Scripture. It's not just about marriage. It's about meaningful relationships with the people of God. So we'll jump into the text and talk through a little bit about that. Josh, will you read what Adam read and preached through yesterday, Hebrews chapter 10, verses 23 through 25?
Yeah, here we go. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Hebrews 10, 23-25.
Cool. Love it. Here's just a question as you're thinking through and looking at that text. What are some just initial observations that you see from those, I guess, three verses? I always want to say two because 25 minus 23 is two, but 23, 24, and 25 is 3.
Yes, it
includes. So what are some initial observations from that text? Anyone?
We'll get to this a little bit, but just kind of had... I appreciated Adam having a little fun with that. Faith can seem swervy at times.
Yeah.
You know, so just the emphasis on hold unswervingly. There's a challenge that we would do everything in our power to stay on course. But I think the bookends of that first verse, even when we do swerve, we have one who is faithful.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
He who promised is faithful. And so there's some encouragement that even when we get it wrong, he's always going to get it right. Like elsewhere in the New Testament, Timothy, I think, like God cannot deny himself. You know, he cannot be untrue to himself. He's always going to be who he is. So that's encouraging. But just the word unswervingly, stay on course, stay on point. Every day matters. Every moment matters. Be intentional. So, yeah.
Love that. Adam, what about you, man? What are some initial observations that you've kind of been thinking through as you've hung with this text a little bit?
Yeah. So we don't know why, but there are already here. And I can't remember if I said it in the message or not. Yeah, I did. Or I should have. But you know, we're only 30 years post resurrection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this thing's still new, man. Mm-hmm. And already people are in this habit of like, yeah, we don't need to be together. We don't need to do this. This Jesus thing, it's just me and him, or nobody knows why they had given up the habit of meeting together. There's nothing that's said there. I think that persecution is probably based off of the context of the book of Hebrew, where it's always just, hey, don't drift away, don't drift away, don't drift away. I would assume that's probably what it was, there was probably some anti-Christian persecution going on there.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're like, well, if we don't get together, then it won't be dangerous. So you could almost go to safetyism. Really?
That's one of the connections I made to it. One of the things that I had on a bullet point for us to talk about was that this is something that I had not put together before. Mm-hmm. Is don't neglect meeting together.
Yeah.
What would have been the reason they weren't? Well, yeah, maybe it was because they were like, I don't want to put myself in the room where people are going to come in and get killed, you know?
Well, and you can even look at it too, which will sound very, very familiar to the past couple of years of, if we get together, it could be dangerous for all of us. It's not even just me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about everybody else. I'm putting everybody else ahead of me. And it just could be, it might not be safe for us to be together. And so I think that there's something probably there. But the reminder is that, you know, consider, spur, and encouraging are really tough to do if you're not together.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, those are really, really difficult things to do. So I think for me, the other thing that I didn't bring up in the message, but if you keep reading down, and I believe it's verse 31 of Hebrews 10, it is that verse, it is a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about the warning of, you know, drifting away, walking away. And so there, for me, has always been a connection. In fact, I came across a Piper line this past week. John Piper Carnes sent me a great article about this. But anyway, Piper said this, to walk away from the church is to walk away from Christ. Mm. And there have been all kinds of versions of it. In fact, some of the stuff may end up working its way into the sermon on Sunday, so I may be repeating myself. But
sure.
Cyprian of Carthage, church father. So in the year 210, he was around from 210 to 258, is the one who said, you can't have God as your father unless you have the church as your mother.
Yeah.
So this is, it's an old, old thought.
If you think about it too, like even take from 325, the Nicene Creed,
mm-hmm.
it's, we believe in God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, and, the Holy Church. Like the church is connected way more than we give it credit for. And that's kind of the initial observation.
The worldwide church.
Right, worldwide.
So it would say Catholic, meaning worldwide.
Right.
Correct. So that's the initial observation that I scribbled down verses 23 through 25. Is just like it seems like it's almost impossible for a person to stay hopeful without meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
And so there's this natural connection between the hope that we're holding on to and the people that we're doing life with.
Yeah.
And I think that's so huge.
How about this for the immediate context, Adam? You said it was verse 31 that was it is correct.
Am I right?
It's a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But even more immediately in the context, verse 25, do not give up meeting together. Mm-hmm. Verse 26, if we deliberately keep on sinning,
yes. Yeah.
After we've received the knowledge of the truth,
yes.
No sacrifice for sins is left.
Yes.
Wow.
But only fearful expectation of judgment. And I could go on and on. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
Read in context.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And so the idea of thinking that you can pursue the Christian life on your own apart from a local body of believers is not just, as one person said, wrong-headed. It's wrong.
Yeah.
So it's sinful. It's an act of disobedience to Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and that's why I'll throw this out here and we can just let it hang or talk about it, whatever. That's why I always have kind of not always. That's why I more recently, in the last several years, started to lean away from phrases like my personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, well, no, it's not. Like, you know, and
it is and it's not.
It is and it's not. So there's, but the danger in that phrase is sometimes more than we realize. It's not my personal.
The body metaphor, throughout the scriptures is so powerful.
Right.
Because when one part is gone, you do miss it.
Yeah.
You know, none of us are like an appendix that can just be taken out and they'll survive.
Right.
Like we're going to feel it.
Yeah.
That'd be like the meanest insult that you could give to a Christian.
I see
brother.
You as an appendix.
Yeah, you're an appendix.
You're an appendix.
But no, like if we're not all here, then we're not literally
not all here.
Like right. We can't see because our eyes are, we can't feel because our hands are gone. So
yeah. And it's tough too, because, and like, you know, Piper in this article, he talked about, he's like, no, I'm not talking about the choice to walk away from a particular congregation. You know, sometimes we have people make that choice.
Right.
And, you know, our stance is always, man, we'd love for our church to be your church. But if it can't be your church, then find a church.
Yep.
Because you need that. And but the idea of just saying, I'm just going to walk away from the capital C church because I'm spiritual. Me and God, we're good. And I've got my thing that I do is just, it's sinful. It's a sinful attitude.
Yeah.
God created the church. Once again, can't have God as your father unless you have the church as your mother. Mm-hmm. John Stott would say it's a grotesque anomaly. The New Testament knows nothing of an unchurched, you know, Christian. It just doesn't exist. And so it's kind of a scary place. For me in my seat, or however you want to say our seats, to see so many well-meaning, intending Christians who just don't think that it matters.
Yeah.
And so in our search for significance, in our search for purpose, is it any wonder that some of our 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds are struggling with meaning and purpose and significance, 40-year-olds?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they have given up on is meeting together, is being a part of a local church with all of its warts, all of its bumps, all of its pimples and bruises. I came across this J.R. Tolkien, so we've already referenced him because we've done more content than he has. And more laughs than Tolkien. He wrote his son, and his son told him that he had a, quote, sagging faith. And so Tolkien acknowledged the church's sins, the church's failures, how corruption might weaken a believer's devotion, but he warned his son against the temptation to find in the church's scandals, listen, a convenient opportunity to, quote, turn our eyes away from ourselves and our own fault to find a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because that's what happens is, well, this church over there did this, and so that means all Christians are this, and it's just a focus in on, you know, if you're looking for churches that have problems, it does not take long.
Well, let's think about this, too. Let's marry last week's message with this one.
Mm-hmm.
You said the fruit of the Spirit,
mm-hmm.
love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, all of it. You're not just going to get that from temptation and trouble. You're going to get that in the church.
Correct.
And if you just leave because you're unhappy.
Correct.
Or someone rubs you the wrong way slightly. Like
right.
We have such this culture that we just leave when it gets difficult,
mm-hmm.
but But the church was given to us by God to form us.
Yeah.
With, like you said, all of its warts and pimples. Yeah. And we are not a perfect church.
Yeah.
But like, I know if you would talk about my kid or my wife, like.
Yeah, the way some people talk about the church.
That makes me mad.
That, you know? Exactly.
And like, that's fighting words right there. Yeah. So you can't talk like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've said that same phrase before. If the church is the bride of Christ, then you say something negative about the church, Jesus has a problem with you because you're bashing his bride. And
we're forgetful that the verse applies to us individually, like while we were still sinners, Christ died for us.
Correct.
Yeah. We forget that, like in our filth. Yeah. But then it applies to the church too. Like Jesus loves us more than we can imagine with all of the mess.
Yeah. To quote Josh's dad, which would be a square on the bingo card somewhere.
Yeah.
But I remember him saying in class one day, or maybe it was a chapel sermon, or maybe it was something else. I'm sure he said it in multiple places, but he's like, nobody would walk into a wedding and and say out loud, "Who's the chunk in the white dress?"
Yeah.
But yet that's what people feel free to do to the church.
Yeah.
And it is just kind of one of those things. It's like, man, alive, we got to be, I'm not saying a church is above constructive criticism or any of those kind of things, but I love this line from Trevin Wax, who wrote the article I'm referring to, but he says, "We think people are leaving the church today because of all the church scandals, but it's possible we hear more about church scandals today because people seek to justify their decision to leave."
Yeah.
Because honestly, there are church scandals out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably not as many as you think.
No. I wouldn't think so at all.
Statistically, for sure.
Statistically, you're talking
more Christians
anomalies.
In the world than ever in the history.
Yeah.
And so, we hear about them we hear more about everything now in our digital culture.
Yeah. Historian Philip Jenkins says that it's not the church's transgressions that sped up secularism, but a rapid secularization that looks for more church scandals.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so, obviously, when we use the word church here, we're talking about the bride of Christ. We're talking about
the universal church.
Right, universal church, God's plan for the world.
Yes.
But also, what we're talking about is the people. Like, you guys remember the old classic nursery rhyme that you learned in Sunday school with your hands, right? Like, here's the church, here's the steeple, open the door, there's all the people, right? And so that's what it's made of. And so in the church, you find connection and community with other people of God. And whenever you give that up, that's whenever you're going to find it really, really difficult to hold on to the hope.
Yeah.
That's whenever your hope might become a little bit swervy.
Yeah, mutual care cannot be sustained unless the members of the community regularly gather together.
Yeah.
Cannot do it.
I love that. I was reading Psalm chapter 119 today, the really long one. So
it's got a few verses.
It took a little bit longer than a than a normal psalm. The one that stuck out to me was verse 74. Psalmist writes, "May those who fear you see me and have joy, because I have hoped in your word."
Yeah.
And I just thought that was so cool. It's like the kind of reflecting on that. May the people in the kingdom of God be enriched by me because of the hope that I have in God's word. And so just thinking about that communally, it's like, may that be true for all of us. Like may I be enriched and be given joy because of you and the hope that you have in God. And may you be enriched and given joy by me because of the hope that I have. So this relationship where we're exchanging meaningful relationship with each other all of a sudden grounds us in the hope of God's word and helps us to not to become so swervy in our faith. It is nearly impossible. I would just go ahead and say impossible.
Yeah.
And as we've pointed out, sinful to say, well, I have God, but I don't need the church.
Correct.
No, you need meaningful relationships. So,
well, it's not so, and it is, you need the church and the church needs you.
The church needs you. Yep.
Yeah, it's so you need the blessing of the church, and you need to be the blessing of the church to the church.
Yeah,
And that you cannot. It's very difficult to do that. And let me take a real quick caveat. Like my heart goes out to people who are physically unable to attend, and those things, because, in fact, it actually raises my blood pressure whenever I consider the people that I know and love that mm-hmm. would do anything to just be able to come to church again.
Yep.
But they can't because of their health or just inability, physical inability to do that. And then to see others of us just take it so lightly and for granted.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that's a major caveat, but it's at least a caveat of like, if you happen to be listening to this and it's just like, oh my goodness, I can't come because like I just physically cannot get there any longer. We're not talking about you.
Right.
Because I know in almost all those cases how connected they still are to the body.
Yeah.
I just saw somebody in the Kroger parking lot yesterday.
Yeah.
Hasn't been in church in months.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, I can't wait to get back.
Yeah.
Finally, I'm getting better. So,
yeah.
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 That's fantastic. So anyway. here's kind of the summary statement from Hebrews. I think it's safe to say that Scripture commands, challenges, and encourages believers to be in community together. Mm-hmm. And so you ended up going this route for application, just kind of talking about three different types of communities that we need.
Mm-hmm.
I would even throw out the word on the bingo card, like these are the relational rhythms that we need to make sure are a part of our lives. So mm-hmm. I want to talk through those three different types of communities. And the way that we'll do that is just, I'll throw it out there. Adam, ask you to describe a little bit about what you mean by it. And then we'll just kind of talk about what that circle looks like for each of us. So
mm-hmm.
the first one that you threw out is a community who challenges you. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about what you mean by that.
Yeah, it's a very simple question. Are the people I'm spending most of my time with, do they make me want to be better, to grow, to stretch, and to become more like them, and through that, more like Christ? Mm-hmm. And so you need people who challenge you, who are, honestly, they're just better at some things than you are.
Yeah.
And instead of that intimidating you, we have enough inner confidence because I'm not saved by what I do. I'm saved by the grace of God. So it does not bother me to be around people who are just more gifted than I am or further along than I am. And I just want to be able to rub shoulders with them in hopes that like a tenth of it rubs off, you know, almost like, let me get this right, Elisha, you know, asking Elijah, like, give me a double portion of what you've got, man, you know? And so, because I see what you have, I want that and more.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what the big idea is, like, who is sharpening you? Who is deepening you? Who is making you better? Because you're spending time with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So, Josh, when you think about your life and your circles, what does this type of community look like for you right now or in years past, whatever?
Yeah, sure. Years past, like college days and stuff, it was my buddy Derek, mostly, other guys in small group or whatever, but he and I got the privilege of traveling a couple summers together. Actually, the only summer I wasn't here as an intern, I spent with Derek, and he just always sharpened me, and even still today, I was also on Marco Polo with him yesterday. So he's halfway around the world, so a significant time change. So it's harder to talk live on the phone, but even still, it just challenges me. For him, it's his level of just how so focused he is. Like God is a part of everything he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's one. I mean, I'm in a group of guys too that. We meet up a couple times a year, and it's great. We're chatting this afternoon, actually. So,
yeah,
there you go. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, no, like for me, like right now, I've been able to strike up a relationship with a guy who's a senior pastor at a church that's probably running about. They're just bigger. I'll just say this: they're bigger than we are, and so I just want to be stretched. I want to be strengthened, want to, because like I was telling him, it's just like, I know that where we are isn't where we're going to stay.
Yeah.
And so how can I be prepared? What is that going to look like, you know, as the church gets bigger, as the staff grows, is, you know, how does that change, you know, relationships? How does this, you know, what are some things that I need to be looking for that you've learned? And
yeah.
So I think those are just an incredible thing. But I think on a practical level, you know, if you feel like your marriage is not where you want it to be, start hanging out with people who have a marriage that you admire.
Yeah.
If you're struggling as a parent, or maybe you're a brand new parent, find some people that have, you know, kids, maybe teenagers or adults that are like, holy cow, if my kids end up like 2/3 of the way there, we'll be doing cartwheels, yeah, you know, in our house, and to say, hey, can we go to lunch once every, you know, 2 months or something like that. And just, what are some things? So all those kind of things, business, all money, all the kind of things.
Yeah.
Just finding those people who are, you don't need to be intimidated by.
Yeah.
You don't need to be intimidated by. You right. just say, hey, I want to be better. Mm-hmm. Because who doesn't want to get better? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to get better?
I want to get better.
I want to get better.
Yeah.
So
I think for me, the important phrase, and along with this, is just like, when I think about people that I can surround myself who can challenge me, I think about people, not necessarily exclusively, but mostly people who are further along than I am,
mm-hmm.
that can push me.
Yep.
And so I start to think about, like, you know, people who have been doing youth ministry longer than I have, that I'm mm-hmm. connected with, and that I can call up and ask questions. You know, I officially had a coach for a year, and unofficially have been still hitting him up every now and then. Yep. And,
mm-hmm.
And just super, super great. I even think about this circle. Like, you know, we talk about, you know, sometimes how we're so grateful for, all of you as listeners for tuning in. But truthfully, if nobody listened, I think that the honest truth is, one of the persons who benefited the most from this podcast is me, because I get to sit down with two people who are further along in their faith and in their ministry, getting to listen and to talk. And so, you know, people who challenge, who's further along than you, who you respect and admire, who have been through maybe some things that you'll go through, mm-hmm. that can push you and challenge you and sharpen you. And so just think about that, and then add that to your life. And maybe that's going to be, you know, praying, God, who's this person that I need to reach out to and ask mm-hmm. to, you know, hey, I'm going to buy your coffee once a month. Can we get together?
Right.
And just, can I ask you questions?
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Just black coffee, though, because that's the cheapest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want a $12 Frappuccino, it's on you.
Right. Exactly. And there we go.
We'll go back to the generosity series later.
Yeah. Let's jump to the second one. So, a community who challenges you is the first one. A community who fights for you is the second one. Adam, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you need people in your life who are going to fight for you. And sometimes that means they're going to fight you. Because you could be headed down a wrong path, and you need truth tellers in your life who aren't just going to affirm every bad decision that you're trying to make, who are able to speak and say, hey, I think this is leading towards your ruin. And so that is the true friend. That is the one who is there to help in time of need. And so we need friends who will fight for us. And so that's just the big idea there.
Yeah.
Is you've got to have people who are there who are going to fight for what's best for you.
Yeah, I love that. Josh, what does a circle look like for you right now?
I'm probably going to go back to our small group again.
Yeah.
I've told this story in sermons and things before, but just when we've had losses in our life, it's that group that literally fought in prayer for us and supported us and encouraged and hands on our shoulders and praying and all that sort of stuff. So
that was a
big one. Obviously, we've been blessed with some incredible families too.
Yeah,
but I don't know. That's, everyone doesn't have that. So I just want to be clear that I'm very grateful for my family. That's, a lot of people do have that, and they fight for them. But also, I mean, I've been here long enough too that people at Corinth have fought for me, which is so meaningful, so appreciative. I mean, a long time ago, there was just some people that fought for me, and I was very, very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think about prayer right away with this one. And yeah. This last week has been a really challenging week for Tristan and I, just a variety of different things. And we're at the point now, a week after, all of that sort of stuff, looking back and being like, oh my goodness, like there is a giant arsenal of people who are lifting us up. And it's like, we're so grateful for the community that's fighting for us by praying for us. And we know that that's, you know, our small group here at the church that circles up. We know that that's the staff here at Corinth that mm-hmm. we go to fight for each other and with each other all the time. We know that that's the family that we're a part of that's praying for us and encouraging us. We know that that's even the volunteer teams that we lead and serve with, lifting us up and praying for us. And so that I'm so grateful for that circle. I tell people all the time, like the commercial that I give, if someone were ever to ask me, why should I join a small group at Corinth Christian Church? And the one of many things that I will say, but probably the top thing I will say, is because there really is just nothing like knowing that there's a group praying for you.
Yeah.
That's just so encouraging to me. So that's kind of what that circle looks like and why I'm grateful for that one, especially this last week. So Adam, what about you, man?
Yeah, no, I have, if you are as rich as your relationships, I just feel wealthy.
Yeah. Right.
So I've got circles all around me of people that will fight for me, fight with me, and yeah. You know, all those things. So it's just an incredible blessing. So there, I could not even begin to just like narrow it down to just a handful.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to do. Yeah. And third one, last one, community who tells you the truth. This one stings a little bit, but it's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Too often we surround ourselves with people who just tell us what we want to hear. In fact, I was reading something this morning before we did our podcast just about something else, but like one of the signs of a toxic culture is it's overly positive to where yeah. there's never anything that is factual that yep. is said.
Everything's happy-go-lucky. Everything yeah. that's out there has to make me feel good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so whenever somebody says, hey, give me feedback, you know, what their meaning is, tell me what I'm doing right.
Yeah.
And tell me only what is right.
Right.
Don't tell me anything that might not be. And so we need people who are willing to tell truth, speak truth into our lives. And, you know, that's the one of the most kind things we can do for people is to tell people the truth in a loving manner. Mm-hmm. And so we need people like that.
Yeah. Josh, what does this look like for you, man? Who tells you the truth and nothing but the truth?
That's right. I'll go back to Derek again. We're starting to talk more, and historically he has always been that for me, where we would encourage each other and truth tell to each other and all that stuff. I think my wife as well, yeah. like we're able to speak truth to each other. That's been a learning process of 12 years of marriage now, like mm-hmm. how best to have those conversations,
yep.
but it's important to get there. We've done that as well.
Yeah.
So that's a couple of examples.
Yeah. I'm throwing my wife in there, for sure. She always, always, always is able to tell me the truth in a very loving and kind way. And I still might get my feelings hurt because I'm a little insecure, but, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I really do hear you. And I'm grateful that you said that. I also will throw, the names Fox and Dusty out there. Those are my two best friends. Ever since, like, this is one of the reasons I knew that they were going to be some of my closest friends for life, was that even just like after 2-3 weeks of knowing each other, we were telling each other the truth and in a loving and kind way. And that has continued to this day. And so I'm super grateful for them in my life. Adam, what about you?
Yeah, I would say, and I shared the story in the message. About Alan, my mentor, Alan Algram. And, you know, one time he affirmed me. And so he spoke truth to me of like, what you're going through is big deal, that you're not making this up. And sometimes you just need somebody to say that to you of just right. like, okay, I'm not crazy. This is, I actually am going through quite a bit of stuff right now.
Yeah.
And then I had another time to where, you know, I still remember it. My feeling is still hurt.
Your feeling, singular feeling.
My singular feeling. He's like, I'm sorry if I hurt your feeling. But I still remember I got done sharing a report and he's like, are you done now? And I was like, yeah. He goes, okay, where'd Adam go? Cause I don't like this guy that's sitting right here, you know? And it's just like, oh my gosh, well, that's kind of hurts. You know, did I just not communicate clearly? But even recently I had a friend, you know, we were talking through some things and he's like, you see how this is a problem, right? You know, about something I was doing. And I was like, yeah, I do.
Right.
And we need that. And, you know, we got to learn how to say it in a way that's actually, if we're the one trying to be the one that's giving that.
Yeah.
You got to learn to say it in a way that somebody's going to hear it.
Yeah. And on the other side, if you're the one receiving it, you have to learn how to receive it.
And you have to learn how to receive it. Yeah. And I would throw my wife in there as well. She does a fantastic job.
Yeah.
I'm with those things too. So, yeah, we just got to have those people, got to have them in our lives.
Yeah. So I would say, as we're kind of wrapping up the conversation today, just sit down and start to reflect on what relational rhythm, what type of community may be missing from your life, and sit down and try to figure out what it would look like to add it. And if you need help with that, hit us up.
Yeah,
happy to help.
You could be one community away from changing your life.
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah, and I loved how you said addition or subtraction.
Yeah.
Cause,
you could either add one or remove one. You might be in the wrong circle right now.
Yeah.
And it needs to go.
Yep.
Not easy.
No. So, bottom line, God uses people to form people,
mm-hmm.
and challenge. Have one unhurried conversation.
Yeah.
Why? Why one unhurried conversation? What's what I'm getting at with the question is, like, what's the significance about the unhurried part?
Because when I think I would answer that with a question, and it's, when was the last time you sat down and you really did just have an unhurried conversation with somebody? You didn't have another meeting that you needed to get to. You didn't have 37 text messages that you were worried about replying to. You weren't thinking about, how am I going to get to the practice? How are we going to do this? Whether it's with your spouse, whether it's with a friend, whoever it is, when was the last time you just sat down and said, hey, we're just going to chat and no real agenda. Mm-hmm. I just want to have an unhurried conversation, with you. And I want to listen to you. I want to be listened to. And there's a great quote that says, you know, listening is a strange and magnetic thing. The people that listen to us, we're drawn to.
Yeah.
And it causes us to open up and just experience things that we just don't normally experience. So,
yeah.
Well, I think it was Dallas Willard that was asked one time to describe Jesus in one word.
Yeah.
And he thought for a long time, and then he just said,
unhurried.
Relaxed.
Oh, okay. It was relaxed. I thought it was unhurried.
He said relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had a little bit to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And yet.
Did he? No. Yes.
He gave every person the attention that they, as a God-created person, deserved. So,
love it. Great conversation today. Let's wrap up with a little bit of fun. This one's going to be a little interesting.
Do we need our phones out? You have yours?
No, I just brought my phone out because it's easier for me to type. A little bit here, kind of there.
Are you lonely now that you have your phone out?
Yeah, I am.
We're here for
you. So here's what we're going to do. I've got multiple different topics. We're going to start with NFL quarterbacks all time. So not current, all time. Or maybe current.
Maybe current. Who knows?
All that sort of stuff. You guys together are going to work together to rank them without knowing who they are. So 1 to 5, you're ranking these quarterbacks 1 to 5, but I'm only revealing one quarterback at a time.
Okay.
So I'm going to say the name of a quarterback, and then you have to place him on the number.
But we don't have no idea who the other.
No idea who's coming next.
So you might, you might not include some of the greats. It would just be.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just you have
my
to.
My word. All right.
And then we'll see what we get. Okay.
All right.
So first quarterback, Kurt Warner, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5.
All right, let's
gotta think of who else is on the list.
Yeah, so let's just be conservative and let's just say 4.
Okay, I'm good with 4.
Good with 4? Okay, Kurt Warner goes to 4. Second quarterback, Dante Culpepper.
Okay, so...
So now we got to go 5.
I think so. But because Warner is a Hall of Famer, Culpepper's not.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're going to have to go 5.
5.
Now we better hope the other 3 are better than Kurt Warner. We don't have the, I don't know.
Okay. Next one, Dan Marino.
Okay.
All right.
I'll go
2 on that. Probably.
I would go number 1.
1, 2.
What do you want to do?
Do you don't think Mahomes or Brady is on that list?
So if you want a hot take, I think if you're just talking in terms of like pure quarterback play.
Oh, he's incredible.
So I would still put him 1.
Hey, that's why Brock Purdy wears the number 13, by the way.
Is it really?
Dan Marino?
Dan Marino, I saw something, it wasn't long, but Dan Marino threw 3 touchdown passes on the day Brock Purdy was born.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah. So Okay, sure. Let's go one.
Dan Marino's
one. Here's where this gets fun. Okay, so you've got Dan Marino 1, Kurt Warner 4, Dante Culpepper 5.
Yeah.
Next quarterback, Zach Wilson.
13.
Yeah.
So you've got to put him at 2 or 3.
So definitely 3. Gosh.
Definitely three. And that leaves the 2 spot for Kansas City Chiefs quarterback, Alex Smith. So
yeah,
your list of these 5 is Dan Marino, Alex Smith, Zach Wilson, Kurt Warner, Dante Culpepper.
So Alex Smith was a 49er first.
Yeah.
There you go.
So if we were re-ranking that, it would go Marino, Warner,
probably Culpepper, Smith.
Or Culpepper. Culpepper's peak, though, was high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I would go with longevity. I'd go Smith 3.
Yeah.
Culpepper 4.
And just being a man to come back after his injury.
Oh, no doubt.
Golly. Zach Wilson 95.
All right. one more sports one and then a couple of different ones. Okay. NBA players all time.
Okay.
Now you know, you kind of gotten the thing out of the way. So, you know, maybe don't put someone so low. I don't know.
Yeah.
Here you go.
This is fun. All right.
Don't tell me what to do, Luke.
First one. Mike Bibby?
I don't even remember who he played for.
He played for the Sacramento Kings.
He was a guard?
Yeah, he was a point guard.
Yep. Small.
Arizona. Yeah. Let's start off at...
You're the basketball guy, so...
I would start off this at one. 4.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike Bibby at 4. Next one is Scottie Pippen.
Ooh.
So
he's the best second man of all time, probably.
Yeah. So let's just go number 2.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next one is Ben Wallace.
Ben Wallace, Defensive Player of the Year multiple times.
Afro of.
Yeah, great afro headband.
Yep.
Let's go. He was more impactful than 3? Mike Bibby, so let's go 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Ben Wallace at 3. Wilt Chamberlain.
Ooh.
I mean, he's got to go 1.
Yeah. You can't.
Okay.
Can't put him below Mike Bibby.
Yeah. Okay. Point. And then the 5th one, Robert Ori.
There we go.
Right.
So this might be
it.
A perfect list.
Nailed
you might
it.
Have done this perfectly. Yeah. I think absolutely.
Was Robert Ori on the Bulls?
Robert Ori played for the Lakers and the Spurs.
And the Rockets.
Okay.
One.
And maybe one other team. And he won a lot of rings as a role player.
With those teams. Yeah.
So that might be the only reason I might put him above Mike Bibby, but I don't know.
No, Mike Bibby was an actual star. Robert Ori was a role player.
Okay. All right. New category. Following comedic actors. First, Jack Black.
Oh, so we have to rank?
Correct. Comedic actors.
They're all just comedian based on actors.
Okay. Who you like the most or whatever. Jack Black.
I don't know. 4?
Yeah, let's just go 4.
4? Okay. This is now the 3rd list in a row that you've placed the first one at 4.
Yep.
Will Ferrell.
For comedic?
Yeah.
I mean, let's
gotta
go.
Be high.
Let's go 1.
Okay.
Because this is, there's no stats to back this up. This is all personal
preference.
If Jim Carrey's on the list.
I'd still like Will Ferrell better than Jim Carrey.
Andy Sandberg.
12.
Hot Rod is overrated. How long are we going to do this?
So 5 right 5. There. Okay.
He's great in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Jerry Seinfeld.
As an actor?
As an actor, he's not number 1. He's the best comedian.
Could it be 2 or 3 at this point?
Let's just do 3.
Yeah.
3. And then the last one at 2 is now Kevin Hart.
Sure.
Kevin Hart. So that's not a bad list right there.
We nailed
that one's not bad. Okay. So you got Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart, Jerry Seinfeld, Jack Black, and Andy Sandberg.
Yeah. So
I think that list is accurate.
Yeah. You could swap Seinfeld and Jack Black.
Yeah.
And just because of the actor
acting.
Thing.
Yeah. If you were going comedian.
School of Rock was hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. Great movie.
Also, underrated Jack Black movie, The Big Year.
Never seen
Jack
it.
Black and Steve Martin. It's a movie about bird watching.
Oh, yeah. I've heard you talk about
it. And it is hilarious.
Is that recent? Okay.
It's pretty old. It's older.
Okay.
You what can did find you say
it's on Disney Plus. The Big Year.
Well, if it's on Disney Plus, and then it's not.
It's Owen Wilson as well. So, Owen Wilson,
2011.
Jack Black, and Steve Martin. Hilarious movie. You would never expect
it. It's not super old, I guess. 12 years. I mean, It's
a teenager.
It's enjoyable. Okay, last one. The following states.
Okay.
Okay. Texas.
Once again, purely opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, you could take into consideration
that they have their own power grid.
You could take into consideration like landscape, influence, politics. Like, you could take all of these things into consideration, right?
We just do five.
So it's your y'all's list, Texas.
Whataburger's on the list. So, yeah, five.
Let's just do a five.
Texas,
let's
just do five. Okay.
Just because you can.
That's all right. That's what he secretly wanted
this
us to do.
This is only going to pick me up just a little bit. Okay, attention. Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's definitely
number
better
one.
Than...
no.
Definitely better than Texas. Never been there. Four. Let's just do four.
Yeah.
Okay, Rhode Island at four. California.
Let's just do three.
Sure.
You're just going to go up the list.
Yeah.
Okay. Michigan.
Let's do two.
That'd be a two. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the best state on this list is Kentucky.
There we go.
Right.
You got Kentucky,
yeah.
Michigan,
yeah.
California,
Kentucky has lots of
Rhode Island, and Texas.
Like ale eight, ginger ale.
Ginger ale. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's,
good.
That's good.
Great. So yep. good.
That's a pretty accurate list.
Well done, guys. Well done. You let us know, listeners, what you think about some of these lists, or come up with a list of your own. And bug us about it on Sunday. We'll be happy to talk about this with you. So
I'm just glad you didn't do our staff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought about making that joke, but no. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's a joke.
So Luke. I don't know. Okay. we're super grateful for you guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of Corinth in Your Car. We'll be back again next week for a conversation and some fun and more laughs than you would ever get reading Tolkien. So we'll see you then. Peace and grace.